Today we are going to deal with the subject of prophecy, which is one of the subjects that I don't deal with very often. But I want to give this sermon what I titled The World's System Called Babylon. That there is a system in place today in our world order and what's going on out there. And this system has been devised by the world. It is all around us, everywhere we want to look, especially if you're looking in various places today, you can begin to see how certain elements and certain aspects of world power come into play. We experience it every day in our lives. One of the things that we're going to find as we go through this sermon is that the system wants to take care of you from birth to death. The system thinks that it can replace God. The system thinks that it can make sure that you are supplied with all of your needs that you ever will have. And if we look around today, we can see in so many ways, whether it be in healthcare and or finances and or other areas of our lives, that the government wants to take care of you, right? In our insurance programs, and I'm not here to categorically say any of these things are wrong per se, but what we're going to find as we go through is that man thinks he can solve his own problems. Bottom line, man thinks he can solve his own problems without God. And that system started years and years and years ago, as we're going to find. And as we come down to these latter years and in the time before Christ's return, that we're going to find that the system becomes more and more a god to the world. That they look to it to solve everything. And it wants people to look to it to solve everything. But this whole system has been put in place by mankind. And we need to recognize that it is man's attempt to govern his life apart from God. Man, from the very beginning, rejected God's government, God's ways, and what God wanted them to do, and began to establish their own culture, their own directions, and their purpose ultimately was to show that we can get along without God. Well, when I look around, I see a world that isn't proving that they can get along very well without God, right? We see a whole world that is rocking and beginning to be topsy-turvy in so many ways. So we're going to go through a number of areas that we will discuss today. I would suggest that probably this whole sermon on the Babylonian system is going to take two sermons today and probably 2 weeks from today. We'll finish it off. But going back and seeing what it is, there are two basic truths I think we need to first of all understand about prophecy and about prophetic events. Number one is, and we'll deal with this briefly, the first basic truth about all prophecy is that God reveals the secrets. It is God who reveals knowledge and understanding about what's going on. I'll go back to the book of Daniel as we get right into this whole Babylonian system. And you might think, well, why would I be talking in the United States about a Babylonian system We're not Babylon. Well, you know, they just happen to have a suburb in New York City that's called Babylon, right? Who's to say we're not part of Babylon and the whole system that has been developed? So in Daniel, the second chapter, we're going to pick it up and we're going to read for about four verses, beginning at verse 26 going on, about this number one first point of truth is that God reveals the secret. And we're going to see that if you want to understand God's plan and what he is doing, we need to go to him to get the answers, and he will show it to us. So in Daniel chapter 2, let's pick it up in verse 26, and we'll read through verse 30. In Daniel 2, verse 26, and so the king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? You know, it's kind of hard to actually imagine that a member of the body of God and of Christ was actually at the headquarters of the Babylonian system, and that the head man of that system actually came to Daniel asking whether or not he could reveal the truth about it. I don't think today we have anybody there yet answering those questions and revealing things, although I think in the future there may be somebody that will be there. But he goes on here and he says, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? In verse 27, so Daniel answered in the presence of the king, and he said, the secret which the king has demanded cannot the wise men and the astrologers, the magicians and the soothsayers show unto the king. They don't have the answers, he says. In verse 28, but there is a God in heaven that does reveal secrets, and he does make known to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, what shall be in the latter days. You know, sometimes we don't know, perhaps in the future, maybe even today, that God can still speak to certain rulers in the world today about things. When we believe and understand that God is in control of everything and he knows what's going on, that we don't know what kind of messages sometimes individual leaders in the world are being given. We don't know that for sure. In this case, Nebuchadnezzar said to Daniel, and he was the head of the Babylonian system at that time, he said, there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets, and he makes known to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, what shall be in the latter days. And the dream and the visions of your head upon your bed are these. And then he goes on in verse 29. He says, as for you, O king, your thoughts came into your mind upon your bed. Well, I don't think Nebuchadnezzar was a, quote, member of the church of God, right? But did God speak to him? Did God warn him of what was going to happen and what was going to be coming to pass as that man in that position? If God does that in times past, who's to say he can't do that today? So he is telling you, King Nebuchadnezzar, verse 28, what shall be in the latter days, and your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed are these. As for you, O king, your thoughts came into your mind upon your bed, what should come to pass hereafter. And he that reveals secrets makes known to you what shall come to pass. Notice that? He that reveals secrets. One of God's plans and one of his purposes in working out all of the situations and things that are going on that he reveals secrets to those that he wants to reveal secrets. And so we find there is a God who reveals secrets, and he has made known to King what will be in the latter days. And then he says in verse 30, "But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have." I can't get my calculator and get all my astrology charts and get all of my other paraphernalia for trying to predict the future, all of my financial gurus who can tell me everything that's going on. It's not because of any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes, that shall make known the interpretation to the king, and that you might know the thoughts of your heart. So we find here that God was going to reveal. He was involved in the affairs of what was going on, and he was, for their sake, he was going to make known the interpretation to the king so that he might know the thoughts of his own heart, that God was working in his heart and in his mind, but he didn't clarify things. He had to have that done by his servant. Another way of saying what happens here in Daniel chapter 2 is that prophecy is not of any private interpretation, right? Which we find in the book of Peter. That God will reveal what is to come to pass and what needs to be done. So the first of these two overall basic foundational things about prophecy is that God reveals secrets. And only God can reveal secrets. The second thing is that it takes wisdom on our part to understand it. It takes wisdom on our part to understand. Wisdom for seeing the end of the whole matter. It takes wisdom to understand the direction in which things are going. It takes wisdom to understand the plan of God as it comes to fruition. We might see an overview of all of these things, and we all can see certain things, and to some degree we can all see that world view. But it takes more than that to really understand. It takes wisdom coming from God. I'm going to go over a few chapters to Daniel chapter 12 on this second major point regarding prophecy in Daniel 12. And I want to pick up the first 10 verses of Daniel chapter 12 and see what Daniel says and what God reveals to him. And he says, "At that time then shall Michael stand up, the great prince who stands," which means he watches over the sons of your people. So Michael, and we're talking about the end times, that Michael is going to stand up. He is the one who has been appointed to be guardian or the watch man over the sons of Israel. "And there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, not even to this time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who was found written in the book." So it's very clear, obviously, in Daniel 12 and verse 1, that we are speaking of the last times. A time when things are going to be clarified. In verse 2, then he goes on and he says, "And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Some are going to come to everlasting life, and some are going to come up to shame and everlasting contempt." So there is going to be a resurrection at the time of the end when those who are asleep in their graves, Some will come forward to everlasting life and some to everlasting death. We don't know yet who all of those people are, but by this time they are going to become clear. In verse 3, then it goes on, it says, those who are wise. Notice, my second point is that it takes wisdom. Where do we get wisdom? Go back to Proverbs and find out. Where do you get wisdom? You get wisdom from God. He is the only one who can give wisdom. And he says, those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament. And those who turn many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. In other words, there are going to be, filling in a little bit, within the body of God, the body of Christ, there are going to be individuals who will be teaching people and turning those to righteousness, and both the teachers and the pupils are going to shine like the stars, right? Both the teacher and pupils are going to be wise and know that they have God's inspiration. Now, what does that all mean? It means that the wise are wise because they see where things are headed. They see where things are going. Our wisdom, to a large degree, is going to be able to take all of this plethora of materials out there from all kinds of sources, all kinds of people making predictions and everything else, and put it some way with the wisdom of God to be able to see where it's all going. Because it's written here, right? It's written in the Bible. It's written in the scriptures. But it's the wise who are going to be able to understand that. It's hard to be able to put it all together. There are people in this world who have fantastically brilliant minds, but they don't know where it's all going. You know why they don't understand where it's all going? Because they're not truly, in God's terms, wise with the help of God's Spirit inspiring them to know what is happening. Have you ever thought that perhaps it might be smart, as we are observing, and I know many times we have made the comment that we ought to watch world affairs and watch world news and know what's going on, and I'm fine. But have you ever thought that perhaps you ought to ask God to make you have the wisdom, or give you the wisdom to understand what's happening? That he will make you separate from most of everybody else in the world because we have the basis for knowledge and the basis for knowledge and for understanding the truth. But God isn't going to just pour out that wisdom on everybody just because they want it. We have to ask for it, right? Seek wisdom. Seek the help of God. To be able to see the Babylonian system that is out there. To be able to know where it is all headed, and to give us the ability to take appropriate action. To take appropriate action in what's going on. It takes wisdom, God says in verse 3. And they shall be wise, shall shine as the brightness of the firmament. And they that are turned many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. In verse 4, picking it up in verse 4, but you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book. Until the time of the end, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. I say both from a secular perspective and from a spiritual perspective that knowledge will increase as time goes on. We certainly know that many things are known today that weren't known before from a secular perspective, right? Just look at all that's going on out there and happening. Spiritually, also God is opening doors and opening minds. I dare say that to a large degree, this increase of knowledge spiritually for us started back in the mid-1920s with Mr. Armstrong opening, having his mind to open up to a lot of truths that we still have as foundational truths in the church. He wasn't perfect. He didn't have everything right. But he began to be wise in God's mind because he was willing to seek wisdom and guidance from God. Then in verse 5 then, he says, "And then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on the riverbank, on this riverbank, and one on the other riverbank. And one said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, 'How long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be?'" And verse 7 it says, "And then I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever that it shall be for a time, times and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished." You think about that last statement for a minute. What does that mean? What is that implying when it says, "And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, then all of these things shall be finished"? So it certainly is a strong indication that what are giving us what the environment will be like in the last days. There's going to be all kinds of corruption. But it says, from the reference we just read, of a system that will break in pieces. And it will be shattered and it will be crushed somewhere. And so verse 8, he says, "Although I heard, I did not understand. And then I said, 'My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?' And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end." Now since, by the way, we do not yet understand everything that he says, my assumption is that it is not yet the time of the end, right? Maybe getting close to it, but he says, "Although I heard, I did not understand. And then I said, 'My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?' And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed and sealed till the time of the end.'" Now, exactly when is that? We don't know, really. But I take my Bible to be correct and accurate when it says that as the times go along, it's going to become evident that God has opened up knowledge to these things, right? That he will reveal that in the time of the end. In verse 9 he says, "And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end.'" And verse 10 though he says, "And many shall be purified and made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But the wise shall understand." Now what's he saying? in that verse is that there's going to be a purification process going on. There's going to be both wicked and there's going to be wise that are going to be there together, right? And this time of the end, he says, many shall be purified during that time of the end, and they will be made white and they will be refined, but the wicked are going to continue following the system. Going with the system. And they're going to do what? They are going to continue to do wickedly. And none of them are going to understand, he says, but the wise shall understand. Those who are seeking God's wisdom and his understanding will understand what is going on and what is happening. We don't know exactly how it all is going to work out yet, but it says that the entire time the understanding of the book is made clear. At the time when the time of the end, the understanding of this book will become clear of what God has in mind. And there will be people being purified, people who are being made white, people who are going to be refined at the same time. So there is a system that is building up whose origins we're going to go back and talk about now, but a system that's going to wind up getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and a system that's going to engulf more and more and more people. And it's going to be a system that basically will be saying, come along with me, I can protect you, I can guide you, I can give you everything you need. All you have to do is trust me. Believe in me. Believe in our powers. Of whether it be finances or anything, just believe in us and we will make sure that you wind up on the right side, right? And the system is already in play. But I want to go back now and see, where did this system begin? Where did this system begin? I want to give thanks to my friend Tim Franke, who over in Nashville area, who actually was the impetus for a lot of the ideas that we're talking about today. But where did this system start? And it started before the days of Noah. And going back into the book of Genesis, we're going to find some of that. There is a system that has existed since the times of Noah, whose tenets are, and its ideology and its methods are the same, that have always existed. And these methods that started at the time of Noah are going to get worse and more inclusive, and by the time of the end, they're going to be in full display at all of their pernicious power and their ways of doing things. And step by step, by the time we get to the end, it's going to basically wrap this whole world in its whole systems. And they will be fully developed by the time of the end. And so by the time we get to that seventh trump, when it will all change, it's between now and that seventh trump that we got some major problems, right, and situations that are going on. So what can we know about the system that is in display today by going back and picking up the story a little bit? What can we know from the first system when it was first developed in Genesis chapter 6? We'll go back, or actually Genesis chapter 10. In Genesis, the 10th chapter, we pick up, interesting that Dr. Ward, I was listening to him on a tape the other day as one of my classes, and he made the comment that he says, if there's any one book in the Bible that you must master, it is the book of Genesis. Now, he says you'd better master all the rest of it too, but there's a lot of things in the book of Genesis that are the origins, and we should master the book of Genesis and what it implies for today and what it does and what it is doing. So going back to the book of Genesis chapter 10, we're going to find a story or an account of what happened shortly after the flood. By the way, what happens right after the flood is in total defiance of what God said. They defied God's directions and his orders. So we already see some of the end results. We see a time of trouble that the world will have never seen, and we see a holy people that are being completely crushed. But the genesis of the Babylonian system, we go back to Genesis chapter 10, and it is Noah and Ham and Cush and Nimrod. Okay. Now it's interesting that Nimrod is taken from a word, root word, actually, which means we will revolt. The term Nimrod itself comes from a root word, which means we will revolt. So let's pick up the story in Genesis 10 and verse 8 about the system. And so Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. Now it's interesting that some of the commentaries bring out to you that this word mighty one means that he makes himself renowned for bold and daring deeds. And verse 9 says, he was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, was he just a mighty slayer of animals? Is that all that this meant, that he was a mighty hunter before God? There have been a lot of good hunters down through the years, but that's not what really we are talking about here. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calna, and the land of Shinar, in the land of Shinar. So you find this generation of individuals, beginning with Cush, and coming down through his generations, and they eventually came to one called Nimrod, very strong run. Let me read what one of the commentaries says. It says, Nimrod, as a mighty hunter, founded a powerful kingdom, and the founding of this kingdom is the consequence or result of his strength in hunting, so that the hunting was most intimately connected with the establishment of the kingdom. Hence, if the expression a mighty hunter relates primarily to hunting in the literal sense, we must add to the literal meaning the figurative signification of a hunter of men. That he was a trapper of men by stratagem and by force. That's what another man by the name of Herder says is implied in this whole story. That Nimrod not only was hunting animals, he was hunting human beings. And he was using stealth, and he was using all kinds of subtlety, and he was trapping men by his strategies and by his own force. Nimrod the hunter became a tyrant. That's going on with this commentary. Nimrod the hunter became a tyrant, a powerful hunter of men. This course of life gave occasion to the proverb, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter against the Lord, which immortalized not his skill in hunting beasts, but the success of his hunting of men in the establishment of an imperial kingdom by tyranny and by power. So we go back to the origin of this time, right after the flood, beginning with the sons of Noah, and then we wind up with the one son having these other children and the sons of Shem, or of Ham, and we began with Cush, and during that, Cush begat Nimrod, and they began, in quote, a system that was being put into place. I dare say it was a system, as the International Standard Version says, in defiance of the Lord, in defiance of God, that they thought, because you have to recognize that they had just seen everything wiped out, right? During the flood, they had just observed all of man being blotted out, and they began to realize that not necessarily is God going to protect us from everything. We better build our own protection, our own system. And so the beginning of the kingdom of Babel and Erech and all these other cities was in the land of Shinar. And so they built the city of Babylon on the Euphrates River. And it has been, from the time of Nimrod downwards, has been the symbol of power of the world in its hostility to God. It is a symbol of the power of the world in its hostility to God. Get that expression of what actually happened. So beginning shortly after the flood, a whole system began to develop in opposition to God to lead people to safety, they thought, to protect it. And so what can we get from this? We find in verse 12 anyway that resin was between Nineveh and Calah, which was one of the principal cities. What are the gleaning from that whole text that we can begin to ask about Nimrod, about the system? And I want to give you just a few things. First of all, the system is a mighty hunter. The system makes a name for himself. The system is a hunter of both beast and man. The system was done in defiance of God. The system was an establishment of its own kingdom. And the system decided to expand that kingdom. And the system offered protection to the people of the world. Now, we have a lot of those systems in our world today that promise protection, don't they? I mean, the world financial mess right now, we think we have what? The Federal Reserve that's going to solve our problems. Or we think that Obamacare is going to solve all of our health problems. Or we have our educational system that thinks they can solve our education problems. And you can go down the line of all of these things, but they're based upon the concept of a system. I'm going to turn over then in chapter 11 to pick up from there, in chapter 11 of the book of Genesis. And verse 1. And so the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. In verse 2, and it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And that's where Nimrod established his kingdom. Verse 3, then they said one to another, come. Now, it doesn't say they said to God, right, or asked God, or communicated with God, or sought counsel from God, or sought wisdom from God. What he said was, come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and they had asphalt for mortar. And verse 4 says, and they said, come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. And let us make a name for ourselves. What did they want? To supplant God. They realized that if they were going to, in quote, be protected from another flood, that they're going to have to do it themselves by unifying. I'm not suggesting that they thought that tower was going to keep them from any future flood, although that may also be true. They wanted that tower to go to the heavens anyway. But they said, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves. Is that not in defiance of God? Defiance of what God wants? Lest, he said, now why did they want to do that? Lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. By the way, anybody know what God's command to them was after Noah's and the Noachian flood? Go forth, right? And inhabit the whole world. God wanted them to scatter and spread out. What did Nimrod and the system want? Let's pull them together. Let's bring them into this one area. Let's unify ourselves. Totally contrary to God's instructions. And so this is not what God had instructed, because it said in Genesis 9 and verse 1, we'll just turn back there for a moment, in Genesis 9, 1, it says, and God blessed Noah and his sons, and he said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. He didn't say, let's all replenish the plain of Shinar and let's all build ourselves a big tower so we can all be in this one little place. He said, go out. You know what it requires to go out and replenish the earth? And depend, it requires that you depend on God for your protection, which they were not going to do. If they could gather themselves all together, they thought that they were going to somehow be able to protect themselves from being scattered over the whole face of the earth. So this was not God's instructions. In fact, it was diametrically opposite of what God said. However, by contrast, it's interesting that Noah, when he got off the ark, built an altar to God. You know that? And he sought God's wisdom and his input. But these others scattered to the plain of Shinar and then wanted to build their own fortress, their own powers, their own protection, whatever else. They thought by unifying themselves into one area that they could bring about everything that man wanted. Perhaps we could say they were, in quote, benefactors, right? They thought they could bring what was good for humanity. What did God say? What they thought was good for humanity was destruction in the long run. And so they began to understand that the center point had to be for the unification of them, and that they could put their trust in their own forces and their own abilities. They intended to build a city and a tower whose top should be in heaven, and to reach to the sky and to make to themselves a name that they might not be scattered over the whole earth. You know, to make us a name denotes here and everywhere else in the Bible that it is a reputation, or that they set up a memorial for themselves. The real motive here was that they had a desire for renown, and the object was to establish a central point which might serve to maintain their unity. And there, you can check a couple of commentaries on that, and they will explain a little bit more about what that also means. But in verse 5, going back in verse 5, chapter 11, what happened? We find that the Lord came down to see what the city and the tower which the children of men built. And verse 6 says, and the Lord said, indeed, or going back to verse 5, when God came down, what did he come down to see? The city and the tower which sons of men had built. So what did God see when he came down? He saw a city and a tower. He saw symbols of defiance against God. And he saw a city who offered protection and safety outside of him. And he saw a tower which represented and symbolized bringing people together into one area rather than spreading out and doing what he had said. And so then in verse 6, and the Lord said, indeed, the people are one, and they have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. God, in his perfect wisdom, was looking down the road from this beginning of what was going to come to pass. What we're going to see next time is at the end time, we're going to have the perfect fulfillment of all that they thought they could do in the times of Nimrod. And it will all come together in a system that is contrary. It is anti-God, anti-Christ, anti-plan of God. A whole system. What do we see around in the world today is a system that thinks it can take care of itself, right? We don't need any help from God. We don't need anybody telling us how and what to do. We'll take care of ourselves. Oh boy, aren't they doing a great job? What happened to the stock markets last week? How many points did it drop all of a sudden? If you had an IRA, you wind up losing a few dollars last week, didn't you? You know, almost 2,000 points just since the beginning of January because of what's happening over in China. Do you think we're not in, quote, unified worldwide and we are not hooked to each other? Look what happened to our stock markets because of what happened to China. Other places will be the same. And so God came down and he looked at him. And it says in verse 6, and the Lord said, indeed, the people are one and they all have one language. And this is what they begin to do. Nothing now will be restrained or withheld from them. This is God's wisdom, perfect wisdom. Because right here we see where this is all headed. Where it's all going. So what did he say in verse 7? So come, let us go down and there and confuse their language that they might not understand one another's speech. You know, if this is going to be what they're doing this quickly, we better stop them in their tracks for a while, right? In case it goes too quickly. And so the Lord, verse 8, says they scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth. Guess what? That was what they were supposed to do in the first place. When God told them to go and replenish the whole earth, scatter out over the earth. What'd they do? They brought themselves in together in one little area. Because they thought there was safety in the multitude being close to each other. Which is true somewhat physically, isn't it? Humanly, it's somewhat true. And so God said, let's go down, let's scatter them on, and they ceased building the city, it says in verse 8. And therefore its name is called Babel. Because there the Lord confused the language of all of the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the earth. What he told them to do in Genesis 9 and verse 1. In Genesis 9, verse 1. And so what are the lessons that we can learn from this system back there? That it was a system in defiance of God. It was a system founded by a strong man. A strong man. It was a system where people wanted to gather themselves together. It was a system that wanted to be more powerful than others around them. It was a system that dominated the people of the region. And it was a system that spread to other regions. And it was a system that offered protection. It was a system that offered safety. And in God's perfect wisdom, he saw where it was all headed. It is this same system that God uses to typify what will be in the last days, that will come to pass in the last days. So skipping forward a little bit, we have then the prophetic books of Daniel and Revelation that provide additional insights into this great end time system that will be coming upon this earth. And so next time we're going to pick up where it goes from that ancient time to our modern times. But let me say this, that it is the same system that was then, that is now, and is going to be in the future. And we will find that no matter what name we give it, whether Babylon, Persia, Greece, Rome, or Rome number 2, they are all part of the same system. You know why? Because they were all part of the same image, weren't they? Whether they were the head, or whether they were the arms and the torso, or whether they were the legs or whatever, they were all still part of the same image. And they were all part of the same system, no matter where. And so we will pick that up next time as we go through then the fulfillment of the perfect summation of man's attempts and where he's going and what he's doing in the near future in our lives. So we will cover the rest of it then in the next sermon in a couple of weeks.